to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're talking about eyes today, about research that's being done to help preserve and restore vision. And I tell you what, our guest knows all about it. Dr. David Gamm is director of the McPherson Eye Research Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. His clinical practice is in pediatric ophthalmology, and his research interest focuses on human retinal development and disease. So we'll talk about some of the latest advancements in age-related macular degeneration, glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, childhood onset disorders. There's a lot we can talk about today. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions, comments, or experiences. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post up on Facebook. Love to hear from you. Dr. David Gamm, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you. Always glad to be back.
Well, maybe to start with, talk a little about the McPherson Eye Research Institute. How did it get started?
Well, we've been around now a little bit over 10 years, and the concept was quite unique then, and it still is. And that is most research institutes or eye research institutes are based in one department or have a small cohort of researchers, and they interact with one another over time. And really, the complexity of disease that we're facing today requires researchers from multiple different disciplines across the university and across the state, and even beyond that. And so what our goal is to bring together people from all different disciplines. And we have engineers, mathematicians, biologists, clinicians, and get them in one room and really look at these devastating diseases from new angles and develop teams to approach them as opposed to just individuals. It's a new concept and one that you think would be embraced across the United States, but we're very unique.
Yeah, it's kind of a wonderful way to look at it as far as I'm concerned. And is the range of disease or the incidence of eye disease, is it more than we had 20 years or 25 years ago? Or
Yes. So a lot of the childhood onset diseases that I work with in my clinic are fairly static. A lot of them are genetic. But with the aging of the population, we're seeing age-related diseases, of course, skyrocketing. One of the main ones being age-related macular degeneration, but we also see diabetic retinopathy and glaucoma increasing in prevalence, and that will only continue to happen. And so
we're living longer.
Yeah, exactly. And the importance of our vision as we live longer is even greater because we're healthier otherwise. So these are folks that have a long period of time that they want to enjoy their vision. Economically, it's really important, too, because those folks, we want them to be as active and mobile as possible and to enjoy their vision late into their lifetimes.
The research, the basic research you're doing at the McPherson Eye Research Institute, I know you're doing some cool stuff with stem cells, for example.
Yes. So essentially what we are, the basis for all the research we do is to understand causes of disease. Because if we don't understand what leads to vision loss, then we're kind of just shooting in the dark. So we do that first and foremost and try to understand where things go wrong. And then we fit for purpose the therapeutics that we're working on. And there's four major groups of therapeutics that we focus on. The first is prevention, which is always, it's better to keep what you've got than to replace what you've lost. And then second tier would be pharmaceuticals or traditional drug therapies. And then gene therapies to try and get in before the cells that have bad genes die, to go in there and try to fix them or overcome them. And then later on, if that doesn't work and we have cells, the building blocks of the retina and other tissues in the eye, if they degenerate, then can we replace those? And that's the stem cell-based therapy that you talk about, and we're world leaders in that area.
That is, again, really cool stuff, and it's great that it's happening right here at the UW-Madison. We can see callers online. By the way, you can join in, too, number 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We've got a Facebook question up. We've got some emails at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Ruth, though, in Eau Claire, who has a question. You work with youth a lot. And Ruth has a question, I think, relating to young people. Ruth, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yes, thank you. I have a question. Actually, it's related to an adult My daughter's 37. She's as a child, she has was diagnosed with nystagmus and strabismus, and so she sees when her retina can catch the image and send it to her brain. So intermittently, she sees, doesn't see, depends upon how much her eyes are moving. And she was followed very closely as a child. She had one surgery to straighten some muscles because she, you know, had eyes that went in towards her nose. And that was quite successful. So, you know, as an adult, though, no one's following her. No one's, she doesn't go for regular eye exams because she also has developmental disability, and so she can't go through a typical exam. And yet I feel concerned that we're not watching her at all. Do you have some ideas about this, or is this appropriate in any way for your center?
Okay.
Oh, absolutely. And on the clinical end of things, so first of all, we're pediatric ophthalmologists, and there's nothing magic about the age of 18, right? So we have to draw the line somewhere, I suppose, and say whether you're a pediatric patient or not. But for folks especially who have developmental disabilities, we're very well equipped to be able to maintain our clinical presence with those patients. And so yes, your daughter has every right and should be getting the eye care that any person on this planet has the right to get. And so my suggestion to you would be to contact a pediatric ophthalmologist like myself or one of my colleagues. We certainly have we have five of them here at the University of Wisconsin. We have others in Madison and in Eau Claire and other places as well. But that's the appropriate person, a professional to see would be a pediatric ophthalmologist. And I can talk a little bit more, too, about the nystagmus, which to the listeners...
Yeah, what is that about?
Yeah, so that's a rapid to-and-fro movement of the eyes. So it's kind of a shimmering of the eyes when you look at a person. And sometimes it's hard to see, and sometimes it can be very, very evident when you're looking at a person in the face. And so that degrades vision, and what happens, as the caller very correctly, Ruth, you paid a lot of attention when you were bringing your daughter in, but very correctly mentioned, was that what happens is that when the eye is on target briefly, there's an image that's obtained by the person, and then when it's off target, there's kind of a degradation. So they don't see things like flickering, but they see a general degradation in vision. And it depends on what causes the nystagmus. So nystagmus is just a finding. It's not itself a diagnosis.
Okay.
Some people are born that way, and it's called congenital motor nystagmus or infantile nystagmus. They generally have fairly good vision. And then there are individuals who have nystagmus because they don't see well. So it's a chicken or the egg issue.
Okay.
And Ruth, I don't know if you can have more information about that. But I think the bigger question and the broader question is how to continue to get good eye care. And absolutely, your daughter should have that, I would say. Oftentimes on a yearly or every other year basis. It also keeps you up to date on what's available for these patients.
Yeah, that's a good point. Ruth, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you folks have a website as well.
Yep, vision.wisc.edu, so .wisc.edu, and there's a lot of information on there. It also lists our over 190 members that we have, most of them here at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, but we don't draw artificial boundaries, and so there are people at other institutions here in Wisconsin that add valuable expertise and resources, and if it helps us get the job done, then they're part of our team.
Excellent. And it's vision@wisc.edu?
Vision.wisc.edu.
Vision.wisc.edu.
www.vision.wisc.edu.
There we go. Let's take a call from Jim in Madison next. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much. This is an incredibly timely topic for me. I'm hardly a child. I'm 62, but I was just diagnosed with something called low-pressure glaucoma. And the question I have for the doctor is, well, there are two. Number one, it's fairly new to me. Can glaucoma be arrested with the drop treatment? And then secondly, are there things that individuals can do outside of the drops and the treatment with regard to diet or, you know, supplements or anything like that that help arrest glaucoma or keep it from getting worse?
All right. A lot of good questions in there. You know, glaucoma itself is a very complex disease, and as common as it is, you'd think we know more about it, but we really are still quite in the dark as to what ultimately leads to the disease, which is a degeneration of a particular cell type in the retina called ganglion cells. In the vast majority of cases, that is exacerbated greatly by having higher pressures in the eye. And these are generally not pressures that you can feel. It's not; they don't cause you headaches, at least in primary open-angle glaucoma, which is the most common type. So you really need to have regular eye checks to be able to figure out whether you're susceptible to this. All of our, even though we don't understand exactly what causes those ganglion cells to die and for folks to lose their vision, we know that that high pressure ultimately is what raises the risk. And so all of the medications that we have and all the surgical treatments that we have are designed to lower pressure. However, there are people like yourself that don't necessarily have high pressure. And so what do you do for them, right?
Yeah.
And that tells you that it's not just a pressure disease because people with, quote, normal pressures still have this issue. Now, so what's our approach? Well, it's still to lower the pressure even further if possible. But if that fails, then what do you do? And so that's where a lot of the research is going on right now to understand, again, how those ganglion cells die and are there different ways besides just lowering pressure to be able to protect them, so so-called neuroprotective disorders or therapeutics. With regard to what else you might be able to do, so certainly healthy diet and exercise, not smoking. And then also, just it's good to look, ask your partner if you snore, because people who have sleep apnea can also exacerbate their symptoms. So just making sure that you don't have ancillary problems that might be causing additional issues on top of your diagnosis.
Yeah, thanks,
great.
Jim.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Just to call, you mentioned nutrition, and Chris on Facebook had sent us a note. I would just like you to talk about vision health and nutrition. What can you add to your diet to promote healthy eyes? I mean, do carrots help? Or you know?
Well, I get to sit here behind the microphone, but I'm really just letting you know a lot of the work that is being done by other members of the McPherson Eye Research Institute.
Sure.
We have individuals who are totally devoted to looking at the effects of nutrition on eye health, Julie Maris, the Kleins, and so they're really just pillars in the world community and vision research in this area. And so for the most part, and then listening to them carefully and having them give a lot of talks, it's a lot of what your grandmother told you, right? So you don't smoke, have a very healthy, varied diet, lots of green leafy vegetables, orange, yellow vegetables to get lutein. And for the most part, if you don't have any underlying absorption GI issues, that should get you all that you need.
Okay.
On top of that, there are supplements available for some individuals, but they can be very expensive too. And so if you're on a restricted in a financial situation where these are not inexpensive vitamins to have, talk to your eye care professional, because oftentimes you can get the same supplements naturally, and it would save you a lot of money. But in some cases, it is worthwhile going the nutrition supplement route.
Dr. David Gamm, our guest, director of the McPherson Eye Research Institute at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, as we talk with him kind of about the science as well as the art of vision. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions, comments, or experiences. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, the weather guys will be back to update us on all those meteorological happenings that are going on out there. Hope you can stay with us for that. But right now, taking a look at the science and art of vision with David Gamm, Dr. David Gamm, director of the McPherson Eye Research Institute at UW-Madison. Again, you can call us at 800-642-1234 and email us at ideas@wpr.org. Brad in Minnesota emailed to ask if there is any correlation with having the LASIK procedure and then in later years having a higher or lower chance of cataracts and or glaucoma. Well, there's a multi-part kind of thing got going there, David, but...
Well, that's no, but there is something to be aware of when you undergo LASIK surgery, and that is it can alter the way in which future cataract surgeons that might need to work on you or other ophthalmologists or eye care professionals who are monitoring your disease, how they can monitor it. And when LASIK first came out, we had a lot to learn, and it affected how, for instance, we could accurately measure pressures in the eye. And it also affected how we could calculate the proper power of lens to put in your eye once we did cataract surgery. And so, thankfully, we kind of got those shots across our bow and learned what to do. And so prior to undergoing LASIK surgery, a thorough LASIK surgeon will put together a file for you so that future clinical professionals will be able to have that information on you prior to having the LASIK surgery.
And Adam in Oregon called to ask if there had been any advances in the care of Stargardt's, or there's another one that sounds like Stargardt's, Star Cities. I'm having trouble.
Oh,
with
it's the same Stargardt's.
Oh, yeah, it's both Stargardt's.
It's the same. I think it's the
same thing.
Disease.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Stargardt actually. Funny you should mention that too. I have a patient that was featured actually on Wisconsin Public Radio, Mia Zutter, who has Stargardt disease, is a patient of mine who's in the Paralympics.
Oh.
She's a Nordic skier. And so just a tremendous young lady and a tremendous family. And but anyway, that just goes to show you, I think, what you can do with with low vision, regardless of where we're at with trying to find new therapies, right? It doesn't.
Is that what Stargardt's is? Just low vision?
Well, Stargardt is a inherited disease. So you inherit a genetic defect at birth, and generally, in your single digits of life is when you start to lose vision. It's central vision. So it's like macular degeneration, but very early in life, and you progress to legal blindness almost inevitably. But the peripheral vision is fine. And these kids, again, they're amazing. They can do so many things with their lives. And so in terms of research, that's actually a prime focus of what we're doing, because it's so similar to macular degeneration. They kind of come together. They're kind of joined at the hip. And so there are efforts to get into these patients hopefully early enough before the cells that are responsible for their central vision die, and fix that gene. So either fix it by adding a good copy of the gene that's defective, or actually stitching in a new the defects or the mutation that's in that gene, actually going in, cutting out that part in the patient's own nucleus, and stitching in a healthy blueprint. And that's something that's just really caught on in the last couple of years. We have some world leaders in our institute working in that area. And then ultimately, though, if it's later on in their course of their disease where the cells are actually now degenerated, then there's nothing there left really to fix from a gene standpoint. Then we look at replacing the cells. And there's two types of cells that are missing in those particular patients, both of which we can make spare parts, sort of way. And we're doing that now in collaboration with some public-private partnerships, so that we can move that towards clinical trials in the near future. It's going to be a tall mountain to climb, but we've got the equipment now to start that climb, and we're hoping, first and foremost, to be safe and make sure we don't do any harm along the way, but hopefully we'll be making a positive impact on these patients in the near future.
And it always takes money, and I know there are different ways we look at gaining money and help. And one of the cool events that I like to talk about when it comes up is the annual cycle for sight, and that's coming up pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's March 10th.
Yeah. Explain how that event works.
It was our seventh year, and we've been thankful to grow every year, and it's raised to date about $175,000. Last year we raised a little more than $50,000, and it's an indoor spinning event. So we have three places that this takes place in: Princeton Club West, the Capital Fitness on East Wash, and then the Natatorium here on campus.
So all three in Madison.
Mm-hmm, yep, and they have multiple times to sign up on March 10th to start in the morning and go to the late morning, early afternoon. And you can go to vision.wisc.edu, our website, and there's a link there to sign up. And it's $15 a person. You don't have to. We'd love you to show up and do the spinning with us. It's a lot of fun. We have a lot of teams that sign up that have one or more low vision or blind riders. People also can walk, and of course, you can just donate and support the folks that do ride. It's a lot of fun.
And again, you go to what's the website again?
www.vision.wisc.edu.
Vision.wisc.edu. I've got to go on there and can't remember if I'm available, but I can certainly put in my...
Yeah, we'd love to have you. Yeah, I always do it. I always cycle, and you go at your own pace. You know, we have people of all ages. We have kids, and then we have seniors, and so the instructors there who volunteer their time are really exciting, but they're really good, too. So no. I can't keep up with them, but I do my best, but it's fun, and so it's not a competition in any regard. It's just get your heart pumping in the middle of a chilly winter, although we've had a nice little break here.
All right. Let's go to Bev in Delafield next. Bev, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have had numerous eye issues over the course of my life. As an adult, cataracts in my 40s, and then in my 50s, I had a detached retina. It was repaired. 5 weeks later, it re-detached. They repaired it again, and it seemed to be holding for a while, and then something went wrong. They didn't really understand what, but they told me it could not be fixed. So I was essentially left pretty much blind in that eye. Well, now in my 60s, I was hoping that stem cells would maybe help. But now that I have lost all the pressure, the pressure's down to zero.
Yeah,
it's pretty much collapsed, and I think it's kind of unsightly. Other people say they don't really notice, but I've been told that probably my only option long-term is to have the eye replaced with a false one.
Yeah.
If there's any chance of saving it, I'd sure prefer that.
So you hit on, again, a number of really important topics, and unfortunately this does happen where you have an initial event. I wouldn't doubt if you were perhaps nearsighted as well, and then you had cataracts.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, so that generally kind of comes together where you're nearsighted, you have cataracts. And the vast majority of the time, obviously patients who have these surgeries and have these diagnoses do just fine. But on occasion, there's very nice, well-meaning folks that where it doesn't go right. And in your case, the retina, which is the film in the back of the eye, and it's really a part of your brain. It's a very specialized part of your brain, but it peels off, and then people do the best they can to get it reattached so that it can be close to its blood supply. But in some cases, it just doesn't cooperate and it stays detached. And at some point, if that keeps happening, those cells, the film itself goes bad. And so even though you can reattach it, the film isn't working anymore and you don't get a good picture. And if that occurs, then it's very characteristic that the eye will start to lose pressure. We talked about glaucoma, which is generally high pressure. What you're talking about is something called ptosis, where you have lower pressures. And that also is not a great situation long term. And then on top of that, you can have scarring of your cornea, which leads to, like you said, something that's a bit unsightly. The kicker in all of this is comfort. So if you are having pain in the eye, well, then there's no reason to live. You never want to live in pain. And so in that case, having the eye removed and replaced with a prosthetic with an acrylic shell is definitely the way to go at this point. And really, the surgeons, our oculoplastic surgeons, do a wonderful job with this. And then ocularists, which are a separate profession that go in and really paint that acrylic eye similar to your other one, it's amazing what it looks like. Oh, they are just artists.
Amazing.
Exactly. And I've had so many patients that said, I'm so glad I did this. It looks so much better now than it did before.
Mm-hmm.
But then the issue comes up with what you brought up, which is, well, if we do that, that's kind of a finale, right? I mean, if there's something that comes up with stem cells down the road, well, what do I do then? And we're, like everything else, when we're developing therapies, there's a spectrum that we're aiming for. And you got to crawl before you walk, before you run. And so we're still in the very early stages of developing these therapies and making sure they're safe. And the type of problem you're dealing with right now is a very, very complex one. You're talking about an entire tissue that's not working well. And on top of that, other tissues within the eye are probably not working well either. And so that's not going to be in the foreseeable future. That's shooting for, that's not a moonshot. That's around the sun and land on Jupiter shot right now. And I'm hopeful that it will happen. But at this point, I would say, pay attention to what makes you comfortable. You have to live your life. Really take care of your other eye. Make sure you get a lot of that. You have good
issues too. Early cataracts and a detached retina. And now I'm being told that even with normal pressure, I have early signs of glaucoma.
Okay. And do you feel like...
I really want to hang on to sight in one eye.
Yes, obviously you do. And thankfully, we're given two eyes. That's helpful. But that ratchets up the concern that you have for that other eye. So mm-hmm. hopefully you're getting very good and close care. And should anything happen to that, then that may very well be a situation where some of these therapeutics that we're developing here will be more applicable. Mm-hmm. But I would not be... definitely don't shy away from the idea if the eye is really beyond repair at this point and it's... you feel it's unsightly, and certainly if it's painful at all, don't shy away from the idea of having that procedure done. The folks are just marvelous at it, and I've had so many individuals that were thankful that they went through it.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, Bev. We will take some more callers. Let's go to Gloria in Wauwatosa next. Gloria, hi. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you.
What can we do for you?
Well, I've been diagnosed with pseudoglaucoma, okay. which is an exfoliating type of glaucoma that was explained that there was a flaking of the
mm-hmm.
iris.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing was, do I have open or closed angulation with the glaucoma? And my optician said I had open, and I had one consult that said that you have, he didn't say open or closed, he said narrow. He said your chamber is narrow. And so I was thinking of something more non-invasive. At first I was just thinking I was just having to deal with the IOLs. But now that since the glaucoma was detected, I've been on the drops for about 2 months. I imagine the left and right is about 20. And my concern is that there are hundreds of ophthalmologists out there, but how do I find an ophthalmologist that has hands-on with a lot of different procedures, whether it's an eye stent, whether it's the using a laser, using sure. any other type of treatment? And I was thinking that I don't know if I should even go out of state because I understand that the best eye institutes are either at Johns Hopkins or in New York. So I just want to make sure I'm in good hands, okay?
All right. So, well, I think you could be a lot closer to home than that.
Yes. Yeah. So and you're right. There are certainly a lot of places clinically out there that are very, very good. But we hold our own or better than a lot of those institutions. The listeners today are getting not just glaucoma 101, they're getting glaucoma 330 here. So pseudoexfoliation glaucoma is a rarer form. It's not the typical age-related primary open angle. And it is a case where you have basically little things flaking off of the iris and it clogs the drainage system. So it's generally an open angle. If somebody also said you had a narrow angle, then you've got ticks and fleas. You've got two things.
Oh.
And so that may very well lead to glaucoma, and some of that can cause high pressures now or maybe cause high pressures later. And so you certainly do have a very complex picture. And so essentially then what you really need is a really good glaucoma specialist. And you'd think that ophthalmology being a medical specialty and a surgical specialty that it's related to the eye, that we wouldn't need, eight different subspecialists to deal with the front, the left, and the back side of the eye. But we do. And we do because these are all complex diseases. So what you need is a glaucoma specialist. These are folks that go to medical school, then do a residency in ophthalmology, and then go on to spend one or more years just studying glaucoma. We have wonderful ones here at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. So you do not have to go out of state. All of the latest, greatest procedures that are available for you can be explained to you in detail and the best course of action laid out for you. And I would just recommend you call the Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Sciences here at UW-Madison.
There we go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we take Jim in Clintonville next. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for having this program. I had a stroke last year, a minor, very minor one, and I lost a portion of my left side peripheral vision. I'm wondering if there are therapies that can help at least recover a portion of it back.
Could I ask you, was the stroke in the eye or in the brain?
In the brain.
Okay. And you said it was, you've lost part of the left side of your vision.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so when you look at something, like look at a face, the left side of the face is obscured in some regard.
No, it doesn't go that far toward the front.
Okay, is more off to the side, perhaps. Okay, so essentially what you had was a stroke that affected a part of the brain, the very, very back part of the brain called the occipital lobe, likely on the right side. If it's affecting your left vision, it's kind of reversed in the brain compared to what you see in the outside world. And at this point, unfortunately, no, there's no treatment to reverse that. Oftentimes, people right after they have a stroke like this will see some sort of improvement as swelling goes away. Once that has subsided, then whatever the effect has been on the brain is long term. However, there are the Wisconsin Council for the Blind and Visual Impaired, and there are other resources that you have available that can help you with mobility and getting around. And if you have specific issues or problems, they're wonderful to work with.
So the Wisconsin Council for the Blind
and Visually Impaired, right? Yeah. Right here in Madison, and we're blessed with one of the best low vision and blind councils in the nation, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, there we go, Jim. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And Mark in Baldwin, your turn. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I am 55 years old. I'm increasingly less tolerant of oncoming headlights. Is that a problem?
So have you seen an eye care professional recently?
I have not.
Okay. Most commonly, that's incipient or early cataracts. So what happens is that the lenses that you have that's right behind your iris that you can't see because they're clear, it's like a clear M&M, and it changes shape when you're younger, at least. You lose that as you get older, as I am, but it helps you to focus. It has areas of cloudiness. And as that happens, then as light passes through this material, which should be perfectly clear, it scatters. When you're driving, especially when you're driving at night, your pupils are bigger. It lets more light in. And a lot of times these opacities are mid-peripheral or more towards the edges. And so it causes that scattering of light. It doesn't always mean that you need to have a cataract surgery right away, but it's worth getting checked out and then getting some advice as to how to avoid that.
Mm-hmm. Terrific. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. And as someone who's had cataract surgery, I can tell you that it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Funny story. Oftentimes you do the first eye, and then because it's so gradual, people won't even know the effect on the vision too much. And then you do the first eye, and they're so amazed at how well they see colors and how sharp things are and how bright everything is. That's why they wear those dark sunglasses. But then they'll turn around and they'll say, but what'd you do to my other eye? My other eye's not good anymore. And they didn't do anything, obviously, but now you have a reference point, right? You know how bad it was.
Man. Well, let's go to Susan in Gresham next. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I'm 75 years old. And I have Fuchs dystrophy, mm-hmm. macular degeneration, which my father had, and glaucoma. And so far, I'm seeing pretty well. I don't have any problems except for some little black dots once in a while. My question, though, is can you explain what Fuchs dystrophy is? I really have no idea.
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, Dr. Fuchs, I got his name on a lot of different things. If you observe things and write them down, you can get your name on a lot of things. But in this particular case, I'm sure what you're talking about is a corneal disorder. So the cornea is the clear dome that covers the front part of your eye. And of course, it has to be very clear in order for light to pass through. It also bends the light and helps you focus. On the back, and just like everything else in the eye, it looks really simple. It looks just like it's just clear, right? But it actually has multiple different layers of cells that do different jobs and have to be in a precise relationship where you lose that transparency. And so in Fuchs dystrophy, the innermost layer on the inside of your eye of that clear dome has a defect in it such that they tend to slough off faster than the rest of the normal population. And it's a sort of thing that, like a lot of things in the eye and our body, where if we live to be 300, probably we'd all have Fuchs dystrophy. We just kind of, our parts wear out. So why do some people's parts wear out faster than others? We're trying to understand that at the Eye Institute. But so as that sloughs off, what can happen is it can, your eye can handle that to a certain extent. It just basically the cells that are still there grow and fill in the gaps. But at some point, if that becomes too much, what happens is that the cornea can no longer keep fluid out of it, and it swells. And when it swells, it decreases your vision. In that case, what you can do after, you know, once that it becomes past the point of no return, is you can look at doing corneal transplants. And so there are a lot of things that can be done that aren't necessarily something you'd sign up for in a heartbeat to have a fun weekend, but at the same time, there are treatments for you. And Fuchs dystrophy can be exacerbated by cataract surgery, and good cataract surgeons will go to great lengths to make sure that your cornea stays really safe during those procedures. And so there's a lot out there for you. And first and foremost, make sure you're getting really good care.
Yeah. Well, I'm just concerned about the macular degeneration.
Well, that's a separate issue, right? And so that, and all of these diseases that we talked about are on a spectrum, right? So you can have a little bit, sort of, you know, just like diabetes and hypertension, right? Some people have a little bit, and all they need is to exercise a little bit, and then other folks have to be on 13 medications and are brittle diabetics. Same thing with all these other problems you're talking about. So not everyone is fated to the same endpoint with these diagnoses. In terms of age-related macular degeneration, it's like we talked about, diet, exercise, obviously don't smoke. And then we're working very, very hard. Age-related macular degeneration is really very high on our list of diseases that we're looking to make a positive impact in for patients.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Susan. Appreciate your call. I wanted you to mention again the annual Cycle for Sight event is going on in Madison on March 10th, right?
Yep, March 10th. And we've got some wonderful sponsors, too, MG&E, Opsis Therapeutics. We also have Shopko and Direct Fitness Solutions. And so, and we have prizes that we give away. We have a $1,000 spinning bike for the team that raises the most funds. And another lots of other prizes. But most of all, people come out with their friends, and it's just, you know, I a great time. And we have a lot of walkers,
all
too.
Indoors, it's obviously
all indoors,
spinning.
Yep. Weather doesn't play a factor, except you got to drive to where you got to get to.
And three places.
That's the Princeton West, Capital Fitness on East Wash, and then Auditorium. And it's March 10th, starting in the morning and proceeding on to late morning or early afternoon. We've got a lot of slots, and we're ahead of all previous years in terms of getting folks signed up. And we have teams from the campus. We have teams from the medical school, lots of community-based folks. The Lions Club is kicking in at teams. It's just a great time, and it raises awareness too. And beyond the very critical funds that it allows us to have to go to our teams that are facing all of these diseases and many more that we haven't talked about here today, it allows us a forum so that we can raise awareness for the 100,000 plus individuals here in the state of Wisconsin that are suffering from these problems.
Yeah, and so it's you can sign up at, I'm going to go sign up myself, vision.wisc.edu.
Yes.
David, thank you so much. I look forward to another visit from you. Appreciate it.
Me too. It's always fun. I don't have to chart this or anything. It's great.
And David and I are both wearing glasses, so we have our own set of eye issues.
Right. I didn't get a lot of sleep yesterday.
So. And I've got two students, Tyler and Bradley, sitting in here, and I note that they both have glasses on too. So we're all in the same boat. The McPherson Eye Research Institute at the UW-Madison is doing some wonderful work, and a great place to contact. And you know, if you want to get involved in this race, or it's not a race, it's Cycle for Sight on March 10th, just go to vision.wisc.edu. Well, we're going to turn our attention to weather next. There were some tornadoes this past weekend that were pretty serious, even resulted in some deaths, so we may talk about that. And we'll talk about climate, and we're going to also talk a little bit about the Weather Guy blog that's up there right now and learn a little bit more about that as well. John Martin, Steve Ackerman coming up next here on the Ideas Network.